From downtown Milwaukee, welcome to Money Talk with Bob Landis. Each week, professional advisors from Landis & Company Investments discuss the latest financial developments, offering timely insight and long-term perspective.
You're listening to Money Talk for Friday, March 20th, 2020. On today's show, we've got Kyle Tedding, and looking back at the week, here's Bob Landis.
Well, thank you, Jason. Pretty ugly week indeed. NASDAQ was down 12.6% this week, closing at 6880. NASDAQ down now 23.1% year to date. In the broader markets, the S&P stock composite 500 dropped 15% this week, losing 406 points. The S&P 500 closed today at 2305. The Dow Jones Industrial Average shed 4,012 points this week, a 17.3% decline just for the week. We closed at the bell this afternoon in New York with the Dow finishing the week at 19,174. Dow now down 32.3% year to date. The broader markets down 28.3%. Well, folks, we started the week with the Fed lowering interest rates on Sunday to near zero. That's a full percentage point. They said that they'd buy $700 billion in treasuries. By the next day on Monday, the Dow was unimpressed with the Fed. Fell almost 3,000 points on Monday. Second worst day ever for the Dow outside of Black Monday way back in October of 1987. Absolutely a bumpy week. You know, folks, the questions that I've been getting all week, for every five calls, give or take, coming into the firm, one person just wants to talk. The other four are kind of asking me, you know, when's a good time to buy to take advantages of the low prices? You know, much of what I read lately comes from Capital Economics and some other sources. But it seems that the consensus feels like the market is not going to find a bottom until the virus headcounts start coming down. We had some good news out of China on Wednesday when the Chinese announced that they had no domestic infections. And if you backdate that, the virus started in January in China. So it took them a little over 2 months to bring the headcounts down. The experts here in the United States feel that we're not going to peak with infections for 7-8 weeks. That takes you out to the middle to the end of May. So that's best guess, of course. We're not market timers. We're just trying to balance portfolios appropriately. GDP forecasts are calling for a sharp plunge in output before a recovery potentially in the fall. And think about it this way, 14% of GDP, airlines, hotels, bars, restaurants, sporting events, and entertainment. 14% of the economy in those venues are all shut down, of course. The ranges for a decline in GDP, historic, 7 to 12%, maybe even more for the second quarter of this year. In my opinion, the only thing that'll calm the markets, as I said, will be a decrease in the headcounts of infected people. Plenty to talk about here this afternoon. Kyle, why don't you jump in with a few of your thoughts?
You know, I think the critical piece here that that you hit on right off the bat is that headcount really is the issue right now, that until we get to a point where we can start to slow down the spread of this illness, until we get to the point where you know, we have some confidence that the measures we've taken so far and the measures that we might still need to take are working. You know, there's just no reason to think that the uncertainty is going to disappear. And this is a market that has really struggled because of that uncertainty. And so, you know, as we look at the path forward, as we look at the direction ahead right now, what we're seeing is so many analysts, so many forecasters that are really just you know, more or less shooting in the dark. They have no idea what direction this is going to head near term. And so, you know, you look at earnings forecasts, you can pretty much throw those out the window for a little while. You look at a lot of these economic projections, You know, I think it's a guess more than anything right now. And that's not a bad thing. You know, the very process of going through those forecasts, the very process of analyzing a company is a healthy thing to do, even at a time when, you know, you're not certain of the future. But at the same time, I think if we put too much stock in that right now, we're probably, you know, maybe getting a little bit ahead of ourselves.
You know, Kyle, seems to me that a lot of this is a function of how many people are smart enough to shelter in place. The memo seems to be slow in getting out to a lot of folks you know, there's still crowds gathering and a lot of people out and about. Hopefully more and more people are going to be smart enough just to stay home and gut this out, which of course will have a huge impact on the spreading of the virus.
You know, I think regrettably, Bob, it means that restaurants are going to have to shut down for a little while, or at least limit the types of services they offer, that a lot of service-oriented workers are going to be out of work for a little while. But, you know, when you consider the alternative, a couple of weeks now, maybe a couple of months now versus months and months, you know, just a little bit later on, the ability to flatten the curve, to make sure that you know, we can not overwhelm the hospital systems, it's going to be critical to the economy's long-term viability, not just, okay, what does it mean for the next quarter?
Kyle, of course, a big concern for most people listening to this podcast is, what do I do now? You know, should I make any changes in my portfolio? And I think, Kyle, the short answer for most folks is, try to sit on your hands and not do anything. The vast majority of listeners to this podcast that are clients of ours have 8 to 10 years of their withdrawals sitting in bonds and cash. We'll be talking about the bond market here in a minute, but the point simply is, most folks have years and years of withdrawals sitting in bonds that, you know, give them the staying power to gut out this bear market. You know, the average bear market, it's over in 23 months. Of course, that's the peak to the trough back to the prior peak. The longest in modern history, the recovery was 6 years. That occurred in the late 70s. The second longest was 4 years after the financial crisis. I think it's important, Kyle, to think about life a year from now. A year from now, more than likely, the virus will have subsided. A lot of us that get the virus build up immunity. As we've all read, the vast majority of us will just experience mild symptoms. So I think it's important to just look ahead a year from now, to the point when the schools are back open, the restaurants are back open, the bars are back open, the brewers are hopefully playing again. And you know, things gradually get back to normal. You know, the concern that many of us have is the damage that's going to be done in the interim. You know, the sad fact of life is half this country is living paycheck to paycheck. So you don't get to go to work because you're sick, or your business is shut down, or they won't allow you to go to work. You know, there's some problems there in terms of how do you pay your rent, how do you pay your mortgage. So I was thrilled when the Trump administration announced moratorium on evictions and foreclosures till the end of April. My guess is they're going to have to extend that. So you think about the short-term damage that gets done. And I think one of the issues, of course, is, you know, how much is permanent damage and how much is just temporary damage. You know, you can think of car sales. They'll probably pick up August, September when floor traffic again picks up in the dealerships. So some things can see a rebound where you've just postponed a purchase. Other things like restaurants and sporting events, they'll find it more challenging. Airlines, of course, they had been running full. It'll be challenging for them to make up lost revenue. But the point simply is, you know, a year from now, give or take, it's not hard to imagine an environment where, you know, we no longer experience headcounts. Things are gradually getting back to normal. You know, you and I talked briefly earlier today about not only just panic selling, but people that are forced to sell some of their most liquid investments like treasuries. And I think you got to let that go through. I was thrilled that the Trump administration announced the extension for the tax deadline, because that means there won't be a drain on the treasury just prior to April 15th for everybody to pay their tax bills. So that's certainly going to help on the short end.
Well, and let's remember that the Fed has stepped in now and reinstituted a lot of financial crisis era policies. We had today record buying from the Federal Reserve, $122 billion spent today, a record week for Fed spending, so $322 billion spent this week. And so, you know, I think the systems that we put in place during the financial crisis, the things that were created to really protect the financial system, these are tools now that we've had, you know, we've had some testing on, we've had some time to digest what the impact was. And so, you know, the Fed and other central banks around the world, they're not waiting anymore. They're stepping right up to the plate to say, we're going to take the action we need to make sure that, you know, we're fulfilling the obligations that we have, that we're meeting liquidity needs. And so I think that's a healthy sign, at least for what the Fed is supposed to be doing. It's a sign that maybe the market needs a little help right now, but that's what the Fed's there for.
Kyle, let's talk about the bond market here for a minute. The bonds have been a little bit bumpy, to say the least. You know, on one day I look at bond performance year to date and bonds are up 2%, and then I look a day or two later and bonds are down 2% year to date. Then I look again and bonds are up just fractionally. I think it's important to get across to listeners here that you know, bonds are normally a fairly safe place to invest, and I think the volatility is going to continue, as we keep trying to explain, until headcounts start coming down. But when you look at the Fed action Sunday night, bringing the overnight rate down almost to zero, that's going to help a whole lot of borrowers short term, along with some other avenues for lending that the government's opening up. We read early this morning that the government's going to start lending money directly to corporations. Folks, that hardly ever happens. So that'll be yet another lending vehicle available to corporate America to fund their short-term needs.
Bob, I think the concern for the bond market has been that for so long we counted on the bond piece to look a little different than the stock piece. And, you know, we've known for a while that investors were maybe underpricing the risks to some bonds. And so we spent a lot of time improving credit quality. We spent a lot of time really talking through what would the impact of an event like this, certainly not knowing that this was coming, but you know, that inevitably something like this would come. And what would that mean for our bond portfolios? And we spent a lot of time increasing credit quality. If you look at lower quality bonds right now, the spread, or what investors must be paid to compensate for the risk they take, the spread has really blown out in high yield bonds. It's moved to beyond 1,000 basis points of what, you know, a high quality bond would be paying. And so that's been a severe headwind to high yield bonds. But we've even seen it a little bit in higher quality fare, where spreads have moved a little bit wider than what we would have expected in this type of market. And I think that's, you know, a really big sign that, at least for now, investors are just reaching for whatever the best thing they can sell is, whatever they think they're going to get the best price on, that's what they're selling. And it means that those spreads have widened a little bit. It means the prices have come down a little bit. It also probably means for our investors that, you know, if you don't need cash right now, you don't want to be selling into a market that has this kind of uncertainty. It doesn't mean you can't. It doesn't mean you can't dip into your portfolio if you need to. But I think it does mean that we want to wait a little while for things to settle down before we really try to ascertain what are the right moves we should be making.
Kyle, you look at the high yield market, and so much of it is being buffeted by the literal collapse in oil prices. We've been talking about this issue for a number of years now. Half of all high yield bonds issued last 10 years went to the frackers. For many of the operators, their break even is give or take $50 a barrel. You know, oil's half that now, give or take. And it's difficult for them to pay the bankers back and the bondholders back with that collapse in price. So I think it's important to stick to quality. I thank my lucky stars that we reduced triple B exposure for many investors last year. Felt just a tad early to me. Now it feels like just in the nick of time.
Yeah, I think you're absolutely right, Bob. And again, it wasn't because we knew what was coming. It's because we didn't think we were being compensated for the risk we were taking there. And I think as you look ahead and you say, okay, now there are some opportunities. But again, I think it's far too early to say, okay, let's pick and choose. I think we need to wait for things to settle down a little more.
Kyle, been at this so long that I know when you have significant bear markets like this one, the average investor feels like they need to do something. They need to do something to protect themselves. And you know, once prices go down, it's kind of late, almost too late to reallocate your portfolio. As I've said often, I really hate selling when prices are down. You're just walking into a loss. And I think it's just so very important to keep perspective that you don't need all your life savings tomorrow. You need it to literally last the rest of your life. It's easy to get out of stocks, as you know, you got to just press a button. Getting back in is hard because when this bottom market bottoms, there won't be a lot of empirical data that you're going to be able to point to that'll give you a heads up to start buying. For those folks out there that are licking their chops at these low prices, thinking that they ought to do some buying, you know, my advice is to take whatever money you're thinking about using to get into stocks, divide it into three or four pieces, maybe engage a little bit of it now, but wait for some of it over the next couple of months. As I said, as we get a better sense of, you know, how many people were smart enough to shelter in place, how much, you know, damage did occur, in fact, and wait for when headcounts start coming down, that I think it's going to be one of the few things that will calm this market down.
Well, and I think let's remember, Bob, that one of the things that makes stocks look attractive now is that from a valuation perspective or a PE perspective, we're now below average in terms of price to earnings ratios. The challenge there is that the E piece, the earnings piece, is a huge question mark. That a lot of the earnings estimates are, you know, no better than guesses right now. A lot of the guidance that used to be out there for corporations, what little was left over the past couple of years, those corporations have now said, you know what, we're not providing forward guidance. There's just too much uncertainty to our business right now. And so, you know, I think as that earnings piece solidifies a little more, now then that story becomes a little more attractive from a valuation perspective, but we're not there yet. And certainly I think, you know, that if you're counting on valuations to be the sign for you, you might be looking in the wrong place.
Well, folks, that's the end of yet another Money Talk. Thanks for listening. Call the firm if you have questions, you want to talk. We intend to do this podcast remotely every week for as long as possible. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you next week.
Thank you for listening to Money Talk with Bob Landis. If you have a financial question you want answered on next week's show, email it to moneytalk@landis.com. To keep informed throughout the week, visit our Money Talk page at landis.com.